time, I would like to introduce our second speaker, Liz from Savannah.
I just instantly got nervous. Greg, I want to say thank you for that spirit-filled message. Whenever I stand here, I get so overwhelmed by the love and the joy that I see in this room, because it didn't have to be like this. Sunday mornings were very rough for me. Sunday mornings, I always woke up sick. I never had a bag to wake me up. Before I go anywhere, I want to thank God. I want to invite God into my life and my spirit right now to open me up to be able to carry a message, be able to share the experience, strength, and hope that He has blessed me with, be able to touch just one person in this room, Father, to receive what we all know. That's my spirit right there. I have to pray. I pray when I'm scared. I pray when I'm happy. I pray when I'm sad. I pray when it's just nothing going on. It just feels good to pray. And I too was asked like a week or so ago to come and participate in this convention. I love this convention. I love CPRNet. This is my region. I'm from the Nirvana area. I live in Woodbridge, Virginia. Little itty bitty small town. I migrated there by way of Newark, New Jersey. That's my home. That's where I come from. That's where my disease started, and that's where my disease ended. That's where my recovery began, in Newark, New Jersey. And see, I cannot get to where I am now if I don't talk about where I came from. You know, I have to remember, because they say those who forget are doomed to repeat. I experienced that too. My first introduction to the program of Narcotics Anonymous was in 1989. I was no way ready for this. I was threatened that if I didn't get myself together, that this person that was in my life was going to take my daughter from me. At the time, my daughter was 2 years old, and she was the only bit of hope that I had in my life. At that time, I had hit every bottom that you could imagine. I lost my mother when I was 19. I was pregnant with my daughter. She never got an opportunity to see her first grandchild. So I was raised feeling always alone and abandoned. This child that I gave birth to, that God blessed me with, because she truly, truly was my moment of clarity. It was in that life of that child that brought me here. And I understand that today. But when this person told me that they were going to take her from me, I had to do something. And it was like, you got to get help. You got to seek help. I didn't know that I needed help. I just smoked too much crack. I ain't have enough money to keep going all night. So when the money ran out, I did other things. And when those other things were starting to wear out, I was just tired. I couldn't do it no more. But when this child, when I had this child, my whole life changed. It was something in me, that moment, you know, when we cry out, when I had this child, that moment was like, it's no longer about me. Everything in my life became about her. Everything. From the moment I held her to my heart, I knew I couldn't keep living the way that I was living. Something had to change. So when this person told me I had to go seek help, he put another recovering addict in my path, and she guided me to my first meeting. And my first meeting was the Other Fellowship. And I want to pay respect and homage to the Other Fellowship, because if it wasn't for them, we would not be here. And I thank them. I thank them for their hard-won efforts and laying the path so we could come together in unity. But when I got to that meeting, I didn't remember. I mean, I still, to this day, all I remember was the smell of coffee, because it smelled so good. I didn't drink coffee, but it smelled so good. And at that time, you could smoke in meetings, and I could bum cigarettes off of people, and I sat in the meetings and smoked. At the end of the meeting, the only thing I remembered was some guy saying, please keep coming back. And that was the order of the meeting. So the the seed had got planted from that meeting. I wasn't ready, so of course I didn't stay. I made a feeble attempt, but I didn't stay, and I went back to doing what I normally do, which is cause havoc and hell and destruction. But see, God in his infinite mercy, he knew that this program was tailor-made for me. Through the course of me ripping and running and doing the things that I was doing, there was no spirit. I was empty. I was like a carcass. Anything that you put in me went right out of me. Everything that I thought happened in my life, I did it. There was no belief in anything that I couldn't see, feel, or touch. I was the higher power. And of course, y'all know what happens. When I don't operate in the we, I operate in the I, and I was left all alone again by myself. See, I don't want to go into the whole drug log. I just want you all to know that I did everything that I needed to do to earn my seat here. And some. And the relief didn't come right away. I had to do some serious, serious work to feel the relief. I couldn't connect with you all when I got here. I had to do some things. Like what the simple suggestion said. Make 90 meetings in 90 days. Get to the meeting early. Not 1 minute. Get to the meeting like 20 minutes early. When you get to the meeting 20 minutes early, let the people know your name. When you let them know your name, ask them what you can do. So see, the home group that I had become a part of, which was in New Jersey, the group was called Good Orderly Direction. It was a beginner's first, second, and third step meeting. And I needed that because I had no good orderly direction in my life. And in that group, they made me the coffee maker. As you hear what I said, they made me. Because I didn't do anything I didn't want to do. But at that point in my life, I ain't gonna say recovery because I ain't had no recovery. At that point in my life, I was so desperate. I was so desperate to find the relief of the pain, to let that pain go. I was in so much pain. I couldn't stand myself. I couldn't look in the mirror at me. So I did what they told me to do. Came to meetings early. I made the coffee. I made the coffee terribly bad. I ain't know how to make coffee. I ain't drink coffee. But they taught me. That group nurtured me. That group loved me. That group helped my spirit come alive. Because they didn't tell me those things that I learned from my family members and people that was trying to take stuff away from me. They told me that I was good. That group told me that you can, Liz. There's no such thing as can't. They said, Liz, keep your head held up high and put one foot in front of the other. And don't look back. It was in the love that group nurtured me with that I found my spirit. They taught me. They raised me up from a baby. You know how that baby is in your stomach? Mother's in here. When you first find out that you're pregnant, you start to feel a little willy-willies in your belly. That's what they did for me. I started to grow. I started to believe in myself. I started to foster confidence. They taught me how to pray. And y'all know what that prayer was? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. That was my prayer. That was the only prayer that I knew, and I said that prayer 1,001 times on any day just to get me through. Because I had a whole lot of stuff going on. I had a child that I didn't know who her father was. But I had this child anyway because it wasn't for me to say no. It wasn't for me to make that decision and not have this child here. Do you know the ridicule and the feelings of insecurity I felt knowing that this child didn't have a other half? The things that I had to endure from my family because I couldn't produce a father for this child. But the group, we talk about the most powerful vehicle for the recovering addict. When I shared that with the group, they said she has a father. And he's bigger than all of us. And his name is God. And that's who you tell your family members and anyone that questions her paternity. That's who her father is, and that was my strength. Again, we're talking about breathing life into each other. When I felt like I couldn't go on no more, the group carried me. The group in the beginning was my higher power. Y'all gave me courage to live. Because there were many days when I didn't feel I could do this. And it's still days sometimes now that I feel like I can't do this. But I think about my humble beginnings. So we're going to go on. We're going to fast forward a little bit because I just wanted to let y'all know that I qualify to be here. So in 2000, I left New Jersey and moved to Virginia. I ain't know nobody in Virginia. But I had some things that I was really trying to work through. Y'all told me once I get here and I implement steps in my life, things are going to change. And that was one of the things that had to change. I had to let go of some of my familiarity. It was time for those things to shed away. Like we talk about when we do the fourth step, that we peel that onion and those layers fall off. Well, some of those layers had to go in order for me to continue to grow. So I came to Woodbridge, Virginia. My best friend had moved down here. And I came here not knowing anything or anyone. Didn't know nothing about recovery. Didn't know where I was going to find a meeting. But I asked for help. And they told me, hit that 800 number. Dial that number. Somebody going to answer the phone. So I took the suggestion. And I dialed the 1-800 number. And somebody guided me to a meeting. And I couldn't find it first, but they said, don't give up, keep going. And eventually, I found a meeting in my area, and I walked into this meeting. It was at a shelter, which is where I come from. I come from the shelter system. I was like, perfect place for me to be. And I walked in the room, and I had the most clean time in the room, and I got scared to death. What? And I couldn't understand my process at that time, why God placed me there. Why? I wasn't feeling like my spirit was getting fed because it felt like everybody was draining me. But I had the information and I was charged with the responsibility of giving it back. So I had to show up even when I felt like I was being drained. But eventually, like they say, the broader the base, I started to stretch out and reach out to people. And I found some other meetings and I was able to travel. And see, and I understand today that my purpose for being where I am now, it was not for me. It was for the other recovering addicts to know that you don't have to stay locked in a four-corner box. Because that's what happened to me. I was very comfortable in my place of recovery back home. We had plentiful meetings. I could pick and choose any time of the day where I wanted to go. But it wasn't like that when I moved to this new place. I had to really put the footwork into action. I had to really, really, really show what y'all taught me. It was no longer about the lip service. It was about really having that living experience. We're talking about finding relief in the spirit. So I put the foot to the pavement, and God kept putting me in path with people that were living this program. Not talking this program, living this program. And they were showing me how to live this program. So I met this guy at this meeting. It was on Wednesdays, and I was scared to death, and he was heavily involved in service. And he was like, hey, sister, I want you to come on over here in D.C. I was like, D.C.? Hell no. D.C. was part of my past. I was scared to go to D.C., but he didn't know that. And he was like, I want you to come over here to D.C. and get involved in service. We putting on this convention, and this was my first introduction to real service. And I didn't do it. Because I was scared. Because fear sometimes is a big character defect for me, and it'll stop me from moving where I need to go. But again, when we talk about the seed being planted, he planted that seed of service for me. So I didn't do it that year. I did it the next year. Because I had to build to it. Understanding that sometimes in my way, I still fight with resistance. I still fight with doing the next right thing because of fear. Fear will pivot me and not let me move my knees and not let me move my feet in the direction that I'm supposed to go in. But when I push past it and I look at where our hints came from, it gives me the courage to move and keep moving and keep moving. So when I got involved with this service body, I was all the way out in Dulles Corridor. For any of you all that know where that's at, that's like no man's land. And I'm around all these different people that I'm never usually around. But these people taught me. These people love me. They helped me to understand policies. They helped me to understand the traditions. They helped me to understand that the we of this program, that I am not the driving force of my recovery. It's the we that keeps me clean today. All I have to do is make that decision in the morning to not use. That's my job. Everything else is about the we. You know, so I got involved with this service committee, and I became, I was nominated and voted in as the vice chair of the programming committee. I mean, because I do know a lot of people, and I do travel a lot of places, and they entrusted me with that responsibility. And I was like, wow, ain't nobody never trusted me this big before. But that's how I felt. I felt like this was such a big commitment. And it ties right into searching for spiritual relief. Most of my life, I ran around, running around doing whatever I wanted to do. I couldn't do that here. I couldn't do just what I wanted to do. I did what y'all suggested. I did what y'all told me to do. If I wanted another day clean, this is what y'all say. If you want what we have to offer, then you do what we do. Did I say it right? So I marched to the beat of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, my sponsor told me don't get up here and talk too long, but I want to read something out of More Will Be Revealed, page 99. It says, we grow through pain in recovery and often find that such a crisis is a gift, an opportunity to experience growth by living clean. Before recovery, we were unable to even conceive of a thought that problems brought gifts. This gift may be finding strength within ourselves or regaining the feeling of self-respect that we had lost. Spiritual growth, love, and compassion are idle potentials until shared with a fellow addict. I read that because I have gotten a lot of strength from my fellow addicts. And in 2011, I had experienced a serious, to me, I don't know how serious it is to you all, but I had experienced a serious life-changing event. And when I think about it, I'm on the other side of it now, and I'm happy that I stayed. I'm happy that I didn't let my mind jackpot me out of here. But in 2011, I was on my job, minding my own business, been on this job for 8 years, been consistent, going to work, showing up, being that responsible, productive member that you all have taught me to be. And I get a call around 2 o'clock to come to my CEO's office, and 4 Fairfax County police officers were in my boss's office, and the man called me out by my alias name. So when he called me out by my alias name, I knew it was something from my past. Now, I have worked, at that point I had 15 years in recovery, and at that point I had really worked hard at changing who I used to be. And my spirit was alive, I was thriving in recovery, I was making meetings on the regular, sponsoring people, got a home group, listening to my sponsor to the best of my ability. Actively involved in service and like feeling like so alive until that man called out my alias name. And when he called out my alias name, it was like the bottom fell out of my spirit. Because I knew something was coming back. They always said there's going to be a bill in the mail. Well, my bill showed up that day. And it was one of my first acts of crime. I was 18 years old and got into a discretionary police officer in the state of Florida. And I never went back to answer the charges because I shot the aliens. So for real, out of sight, out of mind. I never went back to address it. And I thought it was really closed because it never came up. So I ain't gotten in trouble again a couple of times. And it never came up. I understand today it wasn't time for it to come up. So they walked me off my job in handcuffs, and I was truly, truly humiliated. Because I had worked very hard, y'all, cleaning up. Not the outside, I'm talking about really cleaning up from the inside, too. And I was embarrassed. The shame and guilt came back. That feeling of despair, all of that came back. And I was like, what am I going to do? And I sat in that holding cell. And of course, the first thing I did was cry like a big old baby. But I had to purge. I had to cleanse. I had to get all of the fear and the anguish and the frustration out. And they give you a free phone call. And the first person I called was my sponsor. That's what y'all told me to do. And once I called my sponsor and told her what was going on, she got right on trying to find ways to help me find some relief. And I sat in that place for 10 days for the marshals to come and extradite me to Florida. Look, they went big time for this little punk charge. They walked me through Dulles Corridor Airport, had to get a connecting flight in Charlotte. I'm like, really? Y'all doing all this for this punk charge? But they had to do what they had to do. But I remember sitting in Fairfax County Jail, and some of the girls had attended the H&I meeting that came up there. And one of the girls had the little white book. And I said, can I read that? And I held on to that book. And I read that book from front to cover. And I got stuck. I didn't say stuck, but for some reason, God kept bringing me to the 11th step. Liz, understand, you can make it through with or without. That kept resonating in my mind. With or without, Liz, I'm here. I'm here. Just believe I'm here. And it gave me the courage to stand in that test of adversity. So when we got to Florida, and I'm going to tell you, the marshals, usually they, when they handcuffing you and they doing all that, they treating you like some ratchetness. They treated me with the utmost respect. And I'm talking about they loosened the handcuffs. Because they're like, we ain't got to do all that. We don't feel no threat from you. Because I was compliant. Because at this point, I started to believe that God had me. At this point, I started to believe in my spirit that whatever I had to face, I got the ability to stand through this. And when we got in front of the magistrate, and the magistrate heard the charges, and I said, yes, I'm here. And she looked at the case, and she said, what? Because originally, this case had been closed by some whatever, stroke of whatever. Florida did an upgrade on their system, and somebody didn't check a box. Somebody didn't check the box. But it's okay. Because I'm grateful they didn't check that box. Because it gave me the courage and the ability to be able to stand and address and deal with that which was still hidden from my past. And let me tell you something about being able to stand with God on your side. You all were there with me in spirit. You were not there with me physically. You were there with me in spirit. And when that magistrate said, go home. All I could say was, thank you, Father. Thank you, Father. Because I know it wasn't nothing but the... I know it was nothing but God in that room that day. And everything that y'all told me to believe, Liz, just believe, he got you. He ain't never gonna let you go. I didn't need nobody to clarify spiritual awakening for me that day. It was evident. It was evident that he had wrapped his loving arms around me to tell me, see, I just wanted you to follow me and trust me.
See, I know that today. I didn't know that then, but I know that today. All of that was for me to continue to connect with him and trust him. My spirit today is no longer about me having what I want, because all of the material possessions that I try to seek for never gives me the relief of knowing that I had God's love in my spirit. None of it. And I don't care if I got a bank account full of money or $5 in my account, I'm going to be all right with or without. So my spirit today is alive. I came here this weekend, and like I said, they asked me to do two topics. The first topic was the Spanish one. I don't speak Spanish. So I respectfully declined. Then they called me back and said, we got another one for you. I love service. I love Narcotics Anonymous. This is the only thing that has given me life. This is the only thing that has worked for me. This is the only thing that has taken that confusion and the fears and the anguish and all of the doubts and the feelings of low self-worth. Today I have worth. I know that there's value in this body. I travel all over the world for Narcotics Anonymous. I share with others as you have shared with me. So I understand when we do that, we are breathing life in each other's spirit. You know, I no longer have to question what God has for me. He's already blessed me with it. To be able to wake up on a Sunday morning and not dozing. To be able to participate in a fellowship with people who are just like me. To live happy, joyous, and free. To be able to party and dance. And when it's all said and done, go back to our respective homes. Wherever we live, whether it's a shelter or what, it's still a home. Because we are no longer homeless. When you make it to Narcotics Anonymous, what does the N and the A say? You are never alone. Never alone. And I'm not alone. You know, I have a full family now. And I can go anywhere in this world. I mean, I done been to California, to Massachusetts. My next place, I'm going to Brazil. I'm going to Brazil. And I'm claiming that. You know, I'm claiming that. Because we can do anything our hearts desire in here. My desire to live today is stronger than my desire to die. I no longer choose to die today. I want to thank you all for coming. And thank you all for letting me participate in my recovery. Thanks for letting me share.